When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
We got the vibe on deck, bro. Four dope brothers talking sports, so let's go. If you could just imagine some dudes into music, get together to talk trash about whose teams is losing. So here we go, Deke Turner, John Lane, Trey Illy, Jay Hill, the MVP, courting the history. So now what? They got they mics and gizmos. Podcast rapper for DC, what it is, mo. Yeah.
Welcome to Sports and Things, a weekly podcast where we go in depth on sports and music topics of the week. Featuring John Lane, Trey Ely, Jay Hill, and host Dennis Turner.
And welcome to a special edition of Sports and Things, everybody. I'm your host, Dennis Turner. With me, as always, I have the fellas, John Lane, Trey Ely, and Jay Hill. Hello, fellas.
What up? Yeah.
What's going on?
So we're doing a little something a little different today. We're trying out a new app called Clubhouse, which is like an exclusive-only high school
invited in Beverly then, Hills 90210, you know, app.
Yeah. Da 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 da. So we decided to come on board since we're all in Clubhouse and just give it a whirl and see, you know, if we can ruffle some feathers with our normal topics about sports. We are musicians who talk sports, and we love to do so. And a couple weeks ago we had a debate. We got into the GOAT debate between LeBron and Michael Jordan, and we're going to continue that conversation today. And I'm going to lead off with the comment from Isaiah Thomas, because I think that's a bunch of bullshit. Isaiah said today, or he said it sometime this week, that Michael Jordan isn't even in his top five of players that he played against. Now, I'm not going to start because I said what I had to say about it earlier, but I just want to get you guys' take on that comment, and then we'll just go into a natural conversation about the GOAT and who is the GOAT and what qualifies somebody as the GOAT, you know, in that whole thing. So let's see. Any, meeny, miny, Jay Hill. Go ahead.
So the Detroit-Chicago rivalry is real, as we also had, you know, our boy on here to discuss that, Zoe, which basically means no matter what Chicago does, you will hate it. They do have Barack Obama. We don't care. We hate it. So that's kind of how Detroit roll. So I feel like no matter what Isaiah Thomas says, he's never going to give Michael Jordan any flowers while he's here. Not one. I should have had the scoring title over him, but I was a pass first guard. So, you know, that's why. Because I would have beat him. You know, every little thing he's going to try, every little thing that he brings up, he's going to try to take him down the notch. So I think, also think it comes from him trying to be somewhat of a double-edged executive, where it's like, I'm not going to really put this dude on this level because I'm trying to get the young kids in here on my team, you know, on my franchise, whatever I end up doing. So Michael Jordan was okay, but you can be the best you. You know, you can surpass Mike. No, you can't. But keep filling these young boys with these lies.
The no you can't was your subconscious?
Yeah. Yeah.
I am your conscience.
I am your conscious.
Hang this shit up.
Yes. Right. You should not try to fade away. Yeah.
So, maybe you should not try to loop de loop.
Yeah. So I mean, I think it's all just bitterness.
Absolutely.
Trey, go ahead. You got it.
Yeah. So I'm going to start this off by referencing The Last Dance. It was a ESPN series about the GOAT. And so anyway, I'm assuming everyone's seen that. And
what was it called?
The Last Dance. The Last Dance. Uh-huh. Yeah.
The Last Dance.
It was about the GOAT.
Oh,
the
no.
Lap Dance. Wow. So anyway, they hand the GOAT a tablet, and he's sitting there, and he's supposed to be in his house.
They hand the GOAT the tablet, the GOAT being Michael Jordan.
There's only one. We're going to get to that, though. So anyway, they hand him the tablet, and he looks at Isaiah talking, and like the face he makes after Isaiah makes the statements that he makes, that's the face I make every time I read one of these Isaiah Thomas statements. You know, because
they all come from
ridiculous.
The same place, too. They all come from JL, just the FYI. He works for Isaiah.
Wow.
That's how he got
brand?
That PlayStation 5. That's how he got that PlayStation.
Damn.
That's how sponsored got by Isaiah Thomas.
Damn. I need you every 5 minutes to send these niggas a tweet for
a reminder. A reminder that I am, that he is not. No, I'm not the GOAT, but I want y'all to remind
me. Yeah, he's not. The thing is with Isaiah, he's not even trying to be the GOAT. He's just trying to make sure that Mike isn't.
Right.
Like that's the definition. Like that is the purest and richest form of hate.
True.
He doesn't even care if he succeeds. He just want to make sure that nigga doesn't.
Yeah, but that's like what was that skit that Dave Chappelle did about the
haters ball?
Yep.
Like, oh yeah,
diabolical hater.
Yeah. 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 He is,
everything
man.
In the world.
Isaiah Thomas.
Happens to you and only you. Yeah.
Like he does not care. If he gets accolades, he just wants to make sure Michael doesn't get his.
That's it.
That's his MO.
That's what I said. He's gonna take it. He's gonna take every chance he gets to knock him down.
I mean, I'm cool with being the second worst player in NBA history as long as Jordan is the worst.
What?
Like he doesn't care.
Man. All right, John.
I think you know Jay and Trey and all of us are in the same boat as far as this. As far as this goes, along with the millions of other people, I can probably count on one hand how many people kind of support Isaiah Thomas's opinion about it. But you know, it's exactly what Trey said. It's this is not a guy who thinks he's the GOAT. This is a guy who's clearly salty about somebody getting so much acclaim and fame for what he thought he did. Either better or just as. And the fact that the culture changed because of Jordan, the fact that we owe Jordan so much for what we see with the NBA, I think it really gets to him. And I think it became a situation where Jordan was able to turn so many people against Isaiah Thomas. And it's been really eating him up, and it still
like,
is.
I feel like the Knicks don't even it's hate the Knicks is. Don't even hate Jordan to this level, and
but
they
wait,
should.
Wait, wait.
You know
nah,
I mean?
They don't.
Nobody
wait. Hates Jordan to that.
Like
level.
I feel like they should, but
the
they
thing
don't.
About it is the thing about it is this too. Like it wasn't just Isaiah Thomas that people hated. People hated the Pistons.
They were the bad just, boys. They took absolutely. Their moniker because they took their moniker.
Yeah, but
they tried to make it a dirty game.
They didn't hate the Pistons. So much that, like, okay, the Bulls didn't hate. I don't think they hated the Pistons.
No, I'm talking about, they hated about the Pistons. Never, about the league, yeah. Like, the league hated the Pistons. Because if you,
I hated the Pistons.
Remember watching the documentary, they said that the Pistons basically stole their championship they got, the back to backs they got. They weren't even supposed to be in the conversation, and they went in and they just roughed everybody up, and that's how they got their championship. So they weren't even in the conversation.
Don't hate me because the rules are what they are. Like that's not that's,
well.
That's
look,
not,
that's I was about to say that I never hated the Pistons.
Me did,
and in hindsight, and in hindsight, when I look back at it, I actually appreciate the Pistons of that era because it really showed the type of league the NBA was versus the type of league it is right now, where Shaq calls it the cupcake league right now. But back in the day, man, I mean, people were bloodied up, elbowing people, throwing basketball at people's heads. Like there were
flagrant one, flagrant like, two,
severe flagrant fouls.
No flagrants here, right. Yeah. Sir.
Yeah, no, it was just look, y'all fight.
Come,
it was
you come to the like paint, know that you're gonna be down here with the big boys.
No, you about to get this elbow up your you about to get this elbow on your chin. So in hindsight, I mean, I never really hated them. I think I hated some players like Bill Laimbeer.
It was one thing to play physical. It was one thing to play physically. It was another thing to sort of play dirty. And that's what that's why Detroit got branded.
They were a dirty team. Yeah. Right. They were a dirty team. And I think that's why people are so hesitant to support Isaiah Thomas. It's because look, the way y'all played was not fair at all. You guys roughed people up, you guys were dirty. The fact that Jordan lost to you twice and still had the balls to go up to you and shake your hand and you left the court before the game even ended is a sign of disrespect.
Not just to Jordan, that is a to huge the game.
Sign of this, to the game. And to this day, you will not acknowledge the fact that Jordan is the greatest of all time. And, you know, our opinion, but our opinion is basically fact. But the fact that he is he is continuing on this rant means that this is just eating him up inside, and he just cannot stand to see it, cannot stand to hear it.
He reminds me of how Snoop was at the Source Awards when it was in New York, and they was like, y'all ain't got no love for Detroit? Mm-hmm. Y'all ain't got no love for the Pistons?
Motherfucker.
Yo, we got two championships. Y'all ain't got no love for Detroit out here?
Look.
No, because of how y'all got
it. You know when Snoop, right before Snoop went up there, somebody took put a gun to his side. It's like, nigga, you going to say something?
Yeah.
You better say something. So, I don't think I got you. Nigga, you better say, I got you.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where, like, to me, it just looks like he's trying to throw salt on a career that's unsaltable. It's like you can't
unsaltable.
Unsaltable is the word.
Episode title.
Brought to you by.
He's trying to throw salt on a snail, and he's not a snail.
Right. He's like he's a fucking cat. He's like, why are you throwing salt on the cat?
Yeah.
Cat just like licking his paws. Like, what the fuck are you doing, bro? It doesn't make any sense to do this because at the end of the day, if you just take the numbers, like I read a comment that I think he said if he wouldn't have twisted his ankle, he would have been on par with Jordan.
It was his wrist.
It was his wrist. Yeah, he said if he hadn't had wrist surgery, he would have been on par to keep Jordan out of the finals.
Yeah. Okay. No. Like, no. First off, no. Like. That's just such unrealistic.
But you also have to remember he is. That's why I say he's not trying to throw himself in the GOAT debate. He really thinks Detroit had a better team, and he was like, "Y'all get
did until
love.
They went back. They and did retooled the Bulls.
I mean,
yeah, so, had a better team.
Even then, he's still thinking we had a better team. Y'all had one guy, okay, but that one guy put y'all out. So,
they had two guys.
Which, right.
And he hates that guy. He hates that guy with his entire heart.
Yeah. Because my Detroit team was better than the Bulls. But y'all would have more championships if that was the case.
He also says you wouldn't have won the last three if it wasn't for the guy who used to be on my team.
Yeah.
He claims that.
Okay. Yeah. Let's move off Isaiah Thomas.
How does he have any ownership like he's Rodman's pimp or something? What does that even mean?
Well, we let y'all have him. You know what I mean? Like, because we got tired of him. Actually, San Antonio got tired of him, but we won't even,
Right. Yeah, there you go. Let's he didn't even go straight from Detroit to Chicago.
The actual conversation at hand, which is the GOAT conversation isn't about Isaiah Thomas. Wilt Chamberlain has said his stuff too. Let's leave Wilt out of it because Wilt unless you guys want to talk about Wilt.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, what's the criteria? This is what you're getting ready to get into. What is the criteria?
So give me your criteria for what makes the GOAT the GOAT. Because we talked about this before, but just in detail,
give your criteria. I said criteria into what makes the GOAT the GOAT.
Criteria.
Everybody has a different opinion about what makes that person that person, but it's some things that are just globally and historically undeniable. So, John, you go first. Like, what makes Jordan the GOAT to you? If he is even fact the GOAT to you.
Well,
no ifs.
He is the GOAT to me. There are several things. I think the primary one has to do with how many finals wins you have. Not necessarily how many you've won and lost, but how many you have. I think that's part of the criteria. Another part of the criteria has to do with your defense. Any sort of defensive titles you may have won, any sort of defensive numbers you may have put up, triple doubles, minutes that you've played, how consistently you've played without injury. There's so many facets, but for me, the reason why I think he's the GOAT is because he came up in the golden era of technology. In the 80s and 90s, technology was severely advanced because of the creation of the music video, the creation of cable TV, and the creation of sports channels and news channels going to mainstream. And NBA was able to take advantage of that through Michael Jordan, among other players like Magic Johnson and Larry Bird. But Jordan took it a step further because of his flashiness when he was on the court. And the things that he was able to do while he was on the court surpassed so many other players. Yes, Magic Johnson was flashy too. Larry Bird was not as flashy, but he got the job done. But Jordan literally took kids' brains and made them, I mean, kids had their mouths open agape watching how he played the game. That he literally changed the culture of how to play the game. And the fact that these million-dollar companies wanted a piece of Michael Jordan changed the game as well. So now you're seeing his face everywhere. You didn't see Magic Johnson's face everywhere. You didn't see Larry Bird's face everywhere. You didn't see Will Chamberlain or Bill Russell's face everywhere. You saw Jordan's face all over television, commercials, movies, music videos, everywhere. To me, that is the sign of someone who was a true GOAT because he backed it up by winning six. He was 6-0 in the finals. He won a handful of scoring titles. He won the slam dunk competition, the All-Star game. He was an MVP several years. He won a Defensive Player of the Year award. He has so many accolades that very few players can put in their back pocket. So to me, the criteria of being a GOAT is very, very broad. And Jordan covered basically all of those, in my opinion.
You know, it sounds like not only based on statistics, but it's based on influence and what he was able to do. So Michael Jordan is technically like what Michael Jordan did globally is technically what Michael Jackson did globally. Like he came when Michael Jackson broke. He broke at a time when MTV was just like becoming like this big thing. And he used that platform to catapult him into superstardom, basically. Like it was
I can make an 8-minute video and y'all will play it.
Right.
Cool.
Right.
Let's go. You know,
and if you watch
and I got the money to hire the dopest producers.
You get to hear Rick James complain about how like Mike was being used by the system, but Mike was pimping the system to get to where he wanted to get to with his status and be able to put out the type of music or the type of artistry that he wanted to put out. So, you know, Rick was just mad that he weren't playing his shit.
Yeah.
Because it was
Rick was
risky.
Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, Rick was Isaiah Damn. Thomas.
That's real.
Trey, your thoughts.
So I think that the main thing Dennis was going into where I was going, and it was really a segue off what John said as well. I think it's basically based off of impact. Impact sums it all up. It's, you know, the stuff, not only on the court but outside the game, the figure he was. But you know, let's just talk about the game for a little while, right? So we can talk about stats and accolades, and Jordan has them all. You know, I mean, like, well, he's got but
not in comparison to Wilt. Wilt has better stats.
That's true.
If you, if you go category by category, he tops most of the categories.
Yeah.
Stats, but I mean accolades too, like awards.
More final appearances.
They didn't. They didn't have as many.
They didn't have some of the awards.
They didn't have as many. They didn't have the stat tracking that they do have.
So, but the point is that if there was something to be had at the time Jordan played, he pretty much got it. And the thing is, that's fine. And in this era of analytics, where a lot of the people who favor the current players, right? And, you know, let's just, you know, call it is what it is, because LeBron is the best player now. So people that favor this era will say and favor LeBron. The analytics and stats of this era and all of that favor, and they look at his numbers and that type of stuff like that. Now, that stuff is good, but the point I was really trying to get to is overall impact is if you sit and watch the people play, if you sit and watch each play like all of us have, you see those final series, you see those game sixes, those game sevens, you see those moments. There are, see, in Jordan's career, there are certain moments that make him the GOAT. There are moments. I hate to say it, and this is not, my intent was not to come here and bash LeBron, because I like LeBron. I think he's a great player, but that's where the comparison is sitting at. So there's going to be some comments about LeBron. But anyway, if you look at LeBron in some of those moments, LeBron has shied away. LeBron, there's different things. Even when Jordan lost, it wasn't for lack of trying. It wasn't for shying away. It wasn't for being scared. It wasn't for deferring. It wasn't for none of that. Jordan was going to get killed trying to do it. When they had the Jordan rules in Detroit, they're going to have to kill him. You know, he's going to do everything he can. So, you know, I mean, reality is when those moments come, Jordan always showed up. Like, always. And I think, you know, people might call that the clutch gene. I mean, it might be the clutch part of it. I don't think you can be the GOAT and not also be the most clutch. Like, if you, because how are you the greatest of all time? You're touting you're the, this is the guy, and somebody else is more clutch than you. So when people start talking and leaning heavy on the analytics side, and it ends up being, you know, a LeBron or a this era conversation, I have to say, whoa, whoa, whoa! Did you watch the games though? Did you watch what Mike did?
Yeah.
Did you yeah, watch what he did?
Yeah.
Like, did you watch the impact that he had?
Like, even the name Air Jordan came because of some defying stuff that he was doing physically that was never done prior to him doing it. Like, I get that argument. Even going into the LeBron conversation, because with LeBron, I feel like he defers greatness. Like, he helps greatness become a thing. Like, he's great as a player, but he's also willing to make other people great or give other people the moment to be great. Like, passing first, like the pass first mentality. Yeah. Like, you can't be the GOAT if you don't have the ball in your hand and you're not taking a shot, even though you have the ball in your hand and you're facilitating to someone to get the shot. Like, 9 times out of 10, you have to be the one saying, if everything's on the line, I'm not passing the ball.
It's on me.
Yeah, it's on me. Jay Hill.
So I had one more thing.
Go ahead.
Jay's
still unboxing his PlayStation anyway, so it's fine. Go ahead.
Yeah. So take your time, because mine hasn't come yet. So anyway, So one more thing is that, and this is my opinion, which we already know that, but
it's fact.
Specifically,
he says my opinion, but it's fact.
This is one of my factual opinions. You can't be the GOAT if you got to keep calling yourself, right? So this may be a shot at LeBron, but if there's one thing that is out of favor for me with LeBron, it's that he has bought into the hype, and he has at least a few times gone in front of the media or social media or on his show to shop and pulled the goat lever for himself. And you never heard Mike do that. Mike didn't have to do it. There was no dispute. There was no conversation. Mike went out there and showed you. And if you said Mike wasn't the GOAT, he would make up some story about how you slapped his mama in his mind and go out and beat you by 50 and drop 100 points on you or whatever. You know, I'm exaggerating. But he would go out and show you. There was never a conversation. Mike would just go out and just obliterate you and be like, okay, next. So I think that...
Can I ask a question?
Go ahead.
Sorry, Jay Hill, I'm going to let you go too, but... Wasn't the term GOAT derived from talking about Jordan?
But not Jordan talking about Jordan. Didn't,
like the GOAT conversation came from Jordan's play.
Didn't that term GOAT,
you're saying that the,
from the fact that people were talking about Jordan.
So he is the original GOAT of everything.
He is, yes. Oh. That term did not come to light until after 2000.
I think
and
so.
It was because of LeBron James. Because people were wanting to compare LeBron to Jordan, and they were calling LeBron the next Jordan, and then he started losing in the playoffs, and that's when people were like, "Nope, Jordan is the greatest of all time, GOAT," because he's never lost in the finals.
Yeah, I think you might be right, John. I think that conversation about the GOAT derived from this culture, like the current pop culture. Debates that happen.
Mike is the original GOAT.
People have to like.
He's the original
put a title on it, and
that's when Michael Jackson also was starting to be like called that as well.
Same kind of impact. There's a lot of parallels between those guys.
Mike's name was, you know, King of Pop. Yeah. They were calling him the King, and they were calling Jordan his heirness. It's all royalty in that regard. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, I get that. Jay, go ahead.
So, my only real criteria is that you show up when it matters. So the thing we have to also take into account is TV. TV was not getting the same amount of games as they were when Bill Russell, especially when Wilt was playing, because there's no footage of him scoring 100. So I mean, that's still kind of like, did it happen?
It's like saying a nigga went to the moon. I don't think he did.
Right. So, I mean, it's like, did it happen? So, but as we progress in technology, you get to see more. So even the stuff that Jordan was doing, there is someone probably older than Jordan, probably in Russell's, maybe not quite Russell's age, but in that middle ground that can say, nah, this dude was doing stuff before Michael Jordan even existed. You just never saw it. You just weren't able to see it. Now, maybe he didn't have the well-rounded game to become an NBA player and do this shit before Jordan did it, obviously. So Jordan was the first one we got to see do it. Like, the thing, you have to have a personality, of course, is marketable as well. But half the time, people weren't watching regular season games because they weren't really televised. So all you got to see was playoff ball.
Right.
All you really got to see was playoffs.
Yeah.
Like that was right. It. So now, right, how do you distinguish who's the best player if you've never seen any regular season games? Like, you don't have access to what, you know, the Lakers or the Clippers are doing because they're not nearly a top 10 team, so they're not going to get any airtime. So I don't even know who's on that team, but I know who's in the 16, you know, games for, I mean, the 16 teams for these NBA finals, for this NBA finals race. And you see a consistent thing. Michael Jordan is literally killing every year he's on TV. And then he steps away. And you see everything change, and then he comes back, and it's like,
does the same goddamn thing
three more times.
He literally he's finished. Oh no, he's coming back, and he literally did it all again. So even the fact that he never lost is one thing, but even outside of that, he got to do it on the greatest stage when you had to sit and watch it live. There is no real sports center. There is no real YouTube to kind of see what he did the night before. So if you are a basketball fan, or even if you're not a basketball fan, here's the thing. When you're not a basketball fan, just like football, when the playoffs come, you know this is the elite of the elite. You got to True. This point in the season because
you're great.
During the regular season, you did what you were supposed to do. You handled your business. Now, I don't even understand seeding, but that dude keeps getting to the finals. I don't even – what are they number one and playing a number what? I don't get it. Doesn't matter. This dude is going through everybody, getting to the finals, and winning it. Consistency. That's –
Not and only
convincingly,
that,
like they weren't even losing. They weren't losing the games the thing, in the series. Most series went like five games.
They were cooking.
They were sweeping. They were cooking most times. But like again, you just really get to see it, and then you understand. Like, oh, that's the dude that they always talk about. That's the dude with the shoes. Oh, and then the marketing is just so much greater because again, there is not a flood of shoe contracts everywhere. You had Converse. You had Nike. That was it.
Not only that,
you had Converse, not only that, Nike.
This was the first time.
You had the pump.
Not only that,
British nice nigga. Come on, man.
Not in the league.
Play gears.
Not only that, but that was the first time. That was the first time that anybody was able to watch.
Right.
And I mean, watch on television a team three-peat.
Right.
Nobody saw the Celtics do that unless you were there.
Oh, yeah.
And then
like
he
three-peat.
He died and came back and did it again.
Who's done it since?
The only other guy, the only other guy that I know who was finished and then came back and won, I pray to him every day.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
Well,
literally.
Well, way to make it biblical, Trey. That's awesome.
Jordan is the GOAT.
Okay. Because, you know, the interesting thing about this conversation is that we haven't even included Kobe into this conversation like we did last time.
The only reason we cannot, and we talked about this, the only reason we cannot is because he, unlike what Trey was saying about LeBron, removed himself from it because he admits. Yes. I know.
The funny part about that is Kobe removed himself from the conversation with Michael. Michael removed himself from the conversation about the GOAT, but LeBron didn't. Like, LeBron is putting LeBron himself.
And I feel like LeBron is penalized points for doing that. Like, in my opinion.
The generation. That's the generation. That's for sure. That's what it is. That's the line of thinking.
How old was Kobe when he passed away? Rest in peace to Kobe. How old was Kobe?
42, I think.
42.
42.
42.
LeBron's 35. So it's not like a big age gap there. It's not like a 10-year gap there.
No, but it's a basketball.
I mean, they're
study.
Both the same. They're both a basketball the same study that's because
though. There's a basketball.
But they yeah, didn't. Sure. They went to the NBA. They passed college.
Right.
They went into the NBA early.
Both of them did.
But still, at that time, I remember, even though Kobe was very, very arrogant at a young age, and he should be because he's young. He's 18, 19, making $1 million.
That's why him and Shaq. Basketball. That's why him and Shaq ended up the way they did because he was not mature enough to understand
but
what he had.
You never heard him talk about trying to do better or trying to be the GOAT or trying to be better than Michael Jordan. You never heard that conversation. And I don't necessarily fault LeBron James for
it.
I don't because the media is very good at putting it in his head.
He don't have to feed that.
The
though.
Media was the one.
And
but
the same
I don't
thing
think he would
just
be
recently,
talking
but
about
John,
it
just,
if the media.
You're bringing
I
up,
agree
recently,
with you, John, but I don't think he has to feed it.
But Mike already
well,
admitted
he doesn't feed it. He doesn't feed it to a point where it's
Kobe
like.
Kobe killed it. Kobe was like, I can't be the GOAT because I followed up after him.
MJ already said, I don't know if I could have survived in this age where everything is shown in real time on everything you cannot escape. So he even admitted that, like, because I'm such a private person. We can't, the generation with LeBron, Kobe even to a degree, they are different even though they're close in age. There's still a gap, dude.
No, no, like I get that much. I get that.
There's still a level of everything needs to be public or everything needs to be private.
Even though they're 6 years different in age, that line between Generation X and Millennials
technology.
Is between them.
It's technology.
It's between them. Yeah, LeBron's a Millennial. Kobe's a Generation X.
Exactly.
So,
let me say this too. So, I'm a you guys know I'm a LeBron fan. Like I got on a a Michael Jordan jersey right now, but I got LeBron's jersey behind me. I'm a fan. Like, I appreciate the guy's approach to the game because he has a team first mentality. And if he had the same mentality that Michael had and that Kobe had, I think his numbers would be even, I think his numbers would be insurmountable. He also probably wouldn't have played as long as he did, or as long as he's been playing, had he had the same approach to the game that those two guys have.
I disagree.
I mean, technology.
Because the rules are different. The rules are different. He's not going to take the same amount of physicality that Kobe and Jordan did. So no matter what, you can.
If Iverson survived,
I'll say he wouldn't.
Allen Iverson.
He wouldn't take the same type of brutality that Jordan took. Kobe, you know, at the time that Kobe was going out, it was what it was. The game has changed drastically, but at the same time, LeBron's game has never been I'm the alpha dog in my scoring ability. It's always been I'm the alpha dog in the way I facilitate. Like, I'm the team captain. Everything goes through me. So if I want to score, I score.
I'm about to fuck this whole debate up. Okay. LeBron is a better Isaiah Thomas.
Nigga.
He got the hate too. The hate.
Sponsored by PS5.
Oh God.
He just wants to get off the air so he can go plug in his PlayStation. So you're gonna say some hateful, diabolical shit like that.
I saw him wiring it up while we were talking.
Because the thing is, like, it's a team game for LeBron. And it's not so much not a team game for Jordan.
It is now.
At the same time, y'all niggas got to get up to my level. Y'all got to get up to my level. I'm going to take us there. Y'all got to get up to my level. LeBron is like, here, just do what you do, man. Can you make that shot for me, please? Please, Danny? Please, Danny Green? Make that shot for me, Danny Green? You know?
I think he's like that now because he figures that he can't do it on his own the way that Jordan and Kobe essentially.
I don't believe that.
That's what I'm saying. Because watch LeBron play. Anytime LeBron puts his head down, he's a physical specimen. Like he's
you can't different. Stop
he's otherworldly in that regard. If he puts his head down, nobody is stopping him from getting to the basket.
And maybe like you're saying,
shot, if he wants to take the shot, he takes the shot.
Yeah.
His team maybe like mentality you're saying, is like, though, I need to get everybody onto me so I can kick out to the people we got on the team to shoot the ball.
That's what I'm saying. When he first came into the league, it was about the narrative of playing in the NBA as a starting guard or a forward was you are the guy and you're not passing it to anybody if you want to get to
but
the
he
finals.
Was still passing.
And that's what
he
Kobe
was still passing. Passing.
Like LeBron was passing.
He was passing
in the beginning.
Yeah.
When he was even in his high school games.
Yeah, he was averaging like 25, 7, and 7. He wasn't like
he's always been a passer. Yeah. But I think to Dennis's point, he would have known that that's gonna shave 3, maybe 4 years off my career because I keep getting hit and going to the free throw line. So I agree with Dennis.
That's what I'm trying to say. I feel like because he's the alpha of each team. A lot of teams figure that he's going to get the ball and he's going to be taking the shot. Yes, that will force him to pass the ball more, but he felt like he needed to surround himself around people who could make those shots in order for him to get over that hump of getting into the finals. And that's why he left Cleveland and went to Miami. So he could surround himself around people that he felt that he wanted to create. He wanted to create a super team that wasn't really a super team, but he wanted to create what was essentially a super team because, you know, Kobe won 3 with Shaq, but he won 2 without him.
But he was surrounded.
Jordan only had Pippen. That was the common denominator.
Cool coach.
But
Robin.
the fact that in Cleveland, they were good teams, but he didn't necessarily have anybody around him. He felt like I'm gonna die on this court if I don't surround myself around.
I don't disagree with you, John. I think. When it comes down to it, the mentality is what makes the difference. Like Jordan was like, give me the ball and get out the way.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron's like, give me the ball and watch me facilitate greatness.
So,
like, and if I have to put my head down, I'll get us to the point where we actually get the shot. But I don't have to take the shot because I got everybody else on my team who can put the shot up. I'll just give me the ball and watch me work. And Jordan's like, give me the ball. I'm going to be great. You can't stop me. Like when I stick my tongue out and I'm going to the,
and it can't stop me.
So here's my thing with that.
Five on one, you can't stop me. You know what I'm saying?
So right. So here's my thing with that. Right? Are we even doing this comparison thing right? Should we be comparing LeBron to Magic and Isaiah versus Jordan? Are they even the same comparable thing?
We can wrap this up right here. But Trey, I think the point that I made last time when we had this conversation is that I was saying that LeBron's career is more comparable to Magic Johnson because of the size that he is in the position that he plays. He's a point forward.
He's
6 foot nine, 270. That's
okay. Archetype.
That's
so. On that, let me ask everybody a question. Yeah. So John, who's the GOAT? Roger Clemens or King Griffey Jr.?
Well, has Roger Clemens won a World Series?
I don't even know. But no, Dennis, note, who's the GOAT? Jerry Rice or Tom Brady?
Tom Brady.
But see how that works though? Can you really like so Jay, who's the
different positions?
Is the GOAT Deion Sanders or Jerry Rice? Well, you can't really compare. So the thing is, I just went around different sports. For some reason in basketball, we think we can compare all the positions like they're equal. But in other sports, we'll look at somebody like they're crazy if they ask that question.
He's like, who's the GOAT? The Twinkie or the Ho-Ho? Right.
You like if you do that in football or you do that in baseball or you do that in any other sport, then people would be like, you can't compare a quarterback with a corner with Deion Sanders or Tom Brady. Who's the GOAT? What? We're not having this conversation.
That's true.
But we're comparing Jordan and LeBron, and they're not even really comparable.
Because it's so much of an individual effort in basketball. As opposed
now, with that being said, Jordan basketball is still the GOAT.
Yeah.
All right. So let's.
So wait. So to answer your question, I'm gonna say Ken Griffey Jr. is
okay.
Because I think Griffey and Clemens both won two World Series.
I think the point he was making is that they play two different positions. So we're comparing.
You don't really want to compare a pitcher to a outfielder, right?
Yeah.
Right, but I just want to answer your question.
You can't even compare the batting, right? Because the pitcher doesn't really spend time at the plate.
Hell,
you know, like so.
Like I said,
it's
I'm
not comparable.
King Griffey, and I don't even.
It's
watch
not. It's
baseball,
not comparable.
So.
Yeah, Deion or Tom Brady, who's the GOAT?
Yeah. All right, so shit. I think guys, we may have to do a part three on this subject. Maybe not. But I think we're at a good place where we already knew where we were as a collective on the GOAT conversation. But it's just a good conversation to have when you start to get into the brass tacks of everything that people use to compare the two. And I think at the end of the day, Trey, you hit it on the head. It's an incomparable thing because they're basically two different prototypical players, and they played at two different eras of the game. The game is different. It's a different time. Different rules, and they will never be able to play against each other to be able to say, hands down, I'm better than you.
But it depends on what your criteria is, because if it's consistency, Jordan wins.
If it's a lot of things, Jordan wins. That's my point. Like, it's like, I'm a LeBron fan. I think Jordan's the greatest player of all time because of his influence and what he was able to do and what people were able to actually see and his global effect on the game. That's why he's the greatest. Like, you give him the ball, he rose to the occasion every single time. LeBron, not so much, but he's still a great player. He's going to go down as one of the top five players of all time.
All right.
Period. So we can table that, and we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll have more sports and things.
Hey, family. I want to let y'all know how to find us online and get the latest updates. Here's the rundown. On both Instagram and Facebook, it's Sports and Things. That's spelled SPORTZ_AND_THINGZ. Sports and Things. On Twitter, it's @IsSports. That's spelled IZSPORTZ. Be sure to click the like button and the follow button too. And now back to today's episode.
And welcome back to Sports and Things, everybody. We're going to get into our next subject, which is the entertainment portion of Sports and Things. Just a quick nugget. We are currently on an app called Clubhouse, which is like a social. It's like Soho House.
Exclusive social.
Exclusive like high school party. So we're doing a special edition of Sports.
We the
Things,
best.
Which is a little shorter this week because we're just focusing on two subjects. We didn't want to go too in depth with that.
Yeah, it'll be an hour and 59.
Yeah, we didn't
minutes.
Want to do a 2 hour show for Clubhouse. It says hand raising was turned off by moderators. That's Trey. Trey turned off the hand raising. Nobody's in there but us, Trey.
Hey, they don't know that.
Everybody be quiet if you're not part of Sports and Things.
That's fun. So we're going to get into the entertainment portion of this show. And last week we discussed Stevie Wonder's new song that incorporated Go-Go as the template for the song. And we got into a debate about Washingtonians or people who aren't from the area using Go-Go as a template, but not using the actual musicians that created the art form or who have an appreciation. That's not to say they don't have appreciation for it, but they don't understand the culture that comes along with it. So it kind of misses its mark. So the question I'm going to ask you guys is, how do we feel about non-DC bands playing Go-Go? And are we as artists from this area being too uptight about bands that come into the city playing Go-Go, but like playing at it, because they don't really understand what it takes to actually create or recreate that magic that happens when you see a legitimate Go-Go band like Backyard or Junkyard or Northeast Groovers or Familiar Faces. And we can name a ton of bands, right? Like that, when you hear them, you know that they know what they're doing. And then we hear the bands, without naming those bands that come into the city, we kind of feel like slighted or cheated out of the experience because they don't have, I want to say testicular fortitude.
Jesus.
I don't want to use that word, but I just did.
You did.
Fuck it. They don't have, it's not the same approach because the history isn't there. It's not embedded into them. So two questions. How do we feel about it? And are we being uptight? Let's start with Trey.
Okay, so I'll throw a question back to you guys to start off my portion of the conversation. In that, if the four of us started, hypothetically, the four of us start a country band, none of us go and listen to country music for real. We just go off of our soul, R&B, jazz, whatever we like, chops, and we start making music that we think is country music based off of whatever we've heard during our lives. But we're a country band. We're a black country band, right? If we do that, would you expect country musicians to be upset with what we're putting out? Real country musicians.
Yes. No. Yes.
I would agree with John because, and I'll say this too. Since we all are students of music, right? Like, not to say that these other guys aren't students of music, but you can't really go to school and learn how to play go-go. Like, it's not something that they don't teach it. They don't have a go-go class at like university, right? But you can learn the history of music and you can learn about country music in a class. So I feel like we as students of music have been exposed to it to a point where I feel confident that if I heard it, somebody want me to play on a record, I can go in and execute that without fail because I have enough history and I have enough study in music to be able to pull it off. Me and John played on a country record a couple, like, what was that, 10 years ago?
Did you prep though? I'm saying if we're going out and we're just going to be a country band with no.
What would be the prep for that?
Listen.
Exactly.
Technically, because we did that in college. I did that in college. I listened to all types of stuff coming up.
Well, what's to define? But here's the thing, Trey. What's to define that it's country or that it's pop? You know what I mean? That's completely different because there's a lot of people that are catching flack for ending up on country charts when the song wasn't a quote unquote country song.
He's talking about Taylor Swift.
No, I'm talking about several people. Beyonce had one. Like, it's like, how can you call this a country record, but you know, you're not a country artist? Well, I didn't know you had to be an artist. To me, the argument is the same thing with Little Richard saying that you stole rock and roll from me. I made it. Like,
right.
There's no real, you know, to it. There's no actual instrument or anything that you have.
But there's a format. There's a format and there's a formula to it. Yes, there's a form. That's what makes different genres what they are. The formula and the format.
But the feel is the thing you miss if you don't get into, you know, the vibe, the feel, the history, the culture, all of that.
True.
And what I was trying to do with that question was to take it away from an area and just make it strictly music, because I think that the conversation can become more convoluted with go-go because it has the geographic thing to it. If you take that away and just make it musical, I think that simplifies the conversation, or at least I'm attempting to.
I mean, it puts it in a very it moves the geographical element of it to Africa at that point, because it's based in African rhythms. If you really break it down to brass tacks, go-go is based in that. It's just how you approach it and what you do. Is that Kirk Chambers?
It is, because that's a country song. He's trying to make country trap.
I'm not mad at him for that. Do your thing, Kirk. He's a dope musician. So
yeah,
if anybody can do it, it'd probably be Kirk.
Like we get into this whole hybrid thing, which is why everybody was up in arms with neo soul. Like, why has it got to be neo soul? Why can't it just be soul?
I think people were more upset with the term neo, because it's like you're saying retro soul, but soul music is supposed to be. It's called soul music. Like,
so that's the difference with go-go. Go-go has a lot more than just a feeling. It's a little more instrumentation in it, to me at least. Like, and I'm not a physical musician by any means. I'm a vocalist, but to me there's more elements to it. Like, for me to get a country band, does that mean I have to have, like, and please don't take this as disrespect, anyone that's listening, but do that mean I have to have a washboard? Does that mean I have to have like a jug? Like, does that make it country music? What makes it country music?
What?
Exactly.
I mean, you need at least a banjo.
Do you? Like, and a fiddle. Do you?
You need a fiddle.
Do you though? Like, that's
maybe,
what I'm saying.
Maybe
like,
somebody playing fiddle and harmonica at the same time.
I'm gonna say this. I think there's a lot that goes into understanding a culture of a genre of music.
Right.
So to use the logic, or to use the question that Trey asked about country music, and Jay asking, do I need a jug? Do I need a washboard to make a country music? I think that's part of it. It would be the same thing as someone asking, if I want to do Giant Steps, can I recreate the song using an electronic keyboard?
John,
is it still straight ahead jazz?
I was about to say, can you explain what Giant Steps is to those listeners that don't know what it is?
Yeah, so Giant Steps is a song written by John Coltrane, and it's a bebop tune, and bebop was primarily very, very fast tempo, very fast moving chord changes that were strategically made to enhance the player, because they wanted to be challenged more and they were sick and tired of playing written music in big bands. So they wrote these fast moving chord changed songs, and Giant Steps chord changes were, I guess, more so in the 80s and 90s when people started studying the song. It became one of those songs that was so difficult to play because the chord changes move by so fast. And there's a story or urban legend, however you want to say it, that the pianist, I think it was Red Garland, got the chart that day of the recording, and he thought it was a ballad. And then when Coltrane counted the song off, and it was five times as fast, it caught him off guard. And you can actually hear it in his solo, because he had to solo on it. And you can hear him fuddling through the solo on the recording. So anyway,
is it also a story that Coltrane sat with Giant Steps for like 6 months in his attic?
I think I read that he had it with him for a while,
yeah. And then he introduced it to the world.
Jason Train.
Yeah.
I didn't know that one. I didn't know that story. But, you know, all that to say, if you take someone like Garth Brooks, and Garth Brooks puts out a jazz album, and he's singing Fly Me to the Moon, but he's doing it in a country style. But he's doing it in a country style. Is it jazz?
What is it? Yeah, that's a good question. What is it?
Do they call it jazz music?
Or what they would call it, it's a country cover of Fly Me to the Moon.
A country cover.
It's a country version of Fly Me to the Moon. A country version.
Based on where he classifies himself, basically.
Yeah.
Right. But wait.
So
Garth
wait,
Brooks
I got a question.
Decided to take
because Queen Latifah's a rapper, but Queen Latifah sang on a record. So what does that make her on that record? Like that makes her like a.
But this is what I was getting to.
Queen Latifah
didn't rap. And Queen Latifah surrounded herself around a big band. She got a music producer who specializes in jazz mm-hmm. music so that producer could create a jazz record. So all that to say, when a band from out of the DC area comes here and they have a famous song, I'm just going to take a shot in the dark. Let's just say Anderson .Paak comes here. Okay. And he does one of his famous joints. And they're in soundcheck. And he's like, yo, you know what?
I want to put this
in the box. We should probably try to do this in a go-go style. He's like, yo, he looks at his drummer, yo, can you just play like a straight pocket? I know we ain't got no congos.
Like he's doing way.
Well, he has a drummer. He has a drummer too when he's not on the drums. But he's essentially saying, can we recreate this in a go-go style? But he doesn't understand what's needed. Like, you can't recreate a go-go style if you don't have a congo player. You can't do it. It's severely difficult to emulate. So that goes back to the whole argument of, can someone just go and try to make country music if they don't have a washboard or a jug, or they don't do the country music harmonies? You know those famous country music harmonies? Yeah. And this is the last thing that I'll say about this. I think the reason why a lot of old heads are anal retentive about it, it's because there's so much rich history in jazz and country music. There's not a lot of history in go-go music. Go-go music was born in the late 70s.
Right.
Country music goes all the way back to the fucking, 1920s. Yeah. And jazz music started in the late 1800s. There's enough information and there's enough history that you can study from that. Go-go music literally started like 30, 40 years ago that we haven't been able to implement the style for it to go global yet. So I think when people think they can just come in and they can just start trying to play something without knowing the history or without understanding the type of instrumentation they need, it pisses us off. And it's like, you guys are not respecting
To me, it's like when you have house music, when you have give me something else, like club, like when you go to these cities, you're going to get this style of music because that's what they are like really, really, if not famous for, that's what's a really big sound in this city. You come here, you're going to get the oots. Like there's Miami bass, but there's also the Miami club sound, which you know is just like so like in
there's
your
that
face.
There's that UK club sound, there's a Chicago, Detroit club,
so it's
Detroit.
Like
but, Baltimore.
So it's like when you come to DC, half the time you're not going to know what's in the car beside you, like if it's go-go, because I've never heard that before, but you've heard club, like you've heard Miami club in DC, you've heard Chicago house in DC, but you've never heard go-go in Chicago. Never heard go-go in Miami because it's just not, like you're saying, which I understand now, it's not old enough to have traveled well enough.
Right.
But also, the other things you named are DJ-created types of things versus go-go is actually a band-created thing. I mean, go-go's more like a Zydeco or something like that.
And that's the misstep that most people do because they try to make it in a studio when it is very, very tough, back to John, to emulate it
with just electronics.
I'm thinking about a time very specifically when we were on tour, maybe like 2017, John, when we were in London or we were in the UK, and Amir Odyssey said, let's make one of these songs grime. And grime is a very popular form of rap or electronic music in the UK. And some of us was like, what the fuck is grime? And he like, they had to play it for us.
Yeah.
Like we had to listen to it and like, really, like, it wasn't like they played it for us once. They played a couple of records for us to, like, really get the idea or the essence of what that music was so we could try to recreate that with the respect of that being something that we didn't normally do. And I remember we did it that night, and the crowd went crazy because it was like, we were doing a song like Really. And when we switched to it, they were like, oh, shit, they're doing grime. And it's like, we were like, oh shit, we hit it. We nailed it. But it was also because we took the time to like actually listen
to study it and study it.
You know, but you could also identify the musicians in the room because those were the six people that were sitting there staring at y'all like, what are y'all doing this for?
Well, I didn't see them like, people.
I mean, actually, Dennis is right. Musicians don't go to shows.
Yeah, they don't come to shows and sit up front for free. They in the back eating our stuff in the green room.
That could be another topic.
Musicians don't pay for music or shows. They don't do that. The musician that came to the show, he was on stage with us jumping around. He was the rapper that was on stage with us.
Yeah, that's right.
So you know, I think we all are in cahoots with that. I think we agree that at the end of the day, you have to kind of pay respect to the genre of music, regardless of what genre of music it is you're trying to emulate when you go into a different city or different place. And Go-Go has historically been the one that's kind of missed the mark because you have certain elements that are necessity for that music to kind of come off the right way. And when you have musicians in the audience or people who really, like, DC is one of the few places where the music is just as much a part of the everyday life as anything else. Like you ride down the street, you'll hear the most popular song being played on the radio, but the go-go version of it. They don't even want to hear the radio version of it. They want to hear the go-go version of it. Cause it's like, I don't want to hear.
I learned about a lot of rap through go-go. Like it was,
that's what I'm saying. I didn't like
Mobb Deep was cool to me, but when Backyard was hitting Shook Ones, it was like, yo,
I give you a prime example because we all grew up here. Going to house parties when we were teenagers, you never heard anything that was like rap, hip hop, none of that stuff. If it wasn't a PA Palace tape, nobody moved. If it was like, I remember going to house parties,
and
it was
we didn't listen to that stuff.
You know, you had the dual cassette tape players.
Yeah, there was no need for a DJ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like one side was like Backyard, the other side was Junkyard. Yeah.
There was no the room
changed based on what band you put on. But if the tape stops and they had to flip the tapes over and put on the radio, nobody would move. It was like people would just go outside. Yeah. They'd be like, what is this? 95.5. What is this?
No, that's halftime. That's the go-go halftime when they play the DJ come out.
Exactly.
The DJ don't come out for you to dance. The DJ come out for you to go take a break.
Exactly. And my point is like go-go music is so immersed in this culture in this city that I mean it's starting to seep its way into like different areas like ESPN and like I'm pretty sure if we were to actually have an inaugural ball this year, which probably is going to be virtual, but if we would actually have one, a go-go band would probably be playing it at this point because it's.
I mean, we see go-go bands out on the street on the back of on back cabs of trucks. Exactly.
Going down National Mall.
Look, we just had a go-go movement last summer.
Don't Mute DC when
the girl tried to report
the store,
the T-Mobile store playing go-go music, and they were like, T-Mobile spoke up. They're like, look. This is go-go music out of Washington, D.C.
And that story been playing music like that
long before. They've been playing
before
T-Mobile existed.
The Quickie Mart.
The gentrifiers come down here thinking that they're going to change something.
On New York Avenue and North Capitol.
That was right in the corner of Florida and Georgia.
Right on the corner?
Florida and Georgia. Yeah.
Or Florida and Georgia.
Right across the street from the Pitcher Man in the CVS parking lot.
Yep.
With the back,
he's not there anymore.
Mercedes backdrop.
They got him. They got
him
there
anymore with the Mercedes backdrop.
Yeah. So it's like it's a part of our growing up, and I think at the end of the day, we just want people to respect it enough to just take a gander at it before they try to play it at the end of the day.
Right.
Like, I, as a musician, as a student of music, we all are. I don't think we would do that to anybody else. We would pay respect to the genre of music that we were trying to emulate or recreate at that point. And we want the same thing to happen with the stuff that we grew up on and the stuff that is a part of our history as well. So with that being said, we're going to go into our Artist of the Week. And I'm going to let Jay Hill go first.
So being as though it's Christmas season.
Is it?
Right, already. Exactly.
Yes, it is.
Like October 31st.
When Halloween is over, Christmas. It's Christmas season.
The day after Halloween, yes. Christmas season.
Exactly.
Like Black Friday. Out, Black Friday every day.
There's a Christmas album out by Leslie Odom Jr. Really, really good vocalist. And I like...
He was in the Hamilton?
Yes, exactly. Yep, he was in the Hamilton. He was part of that. So... I think y'all need to check it out. Put you in the spirit. He got some original tunes, but he does a lot of course, traditional covers, but he also kind of flips them a little bit of a different way. So I think it's pretty enjoyable. So Leslie Odom Jr. I think the name of it is, I think that's really it. I don't think there is. The Christmas album is what it's called.
All right. John.
Very creative. I'm old, so I'm going to keep it old. My artist of the week is Anita Baker because if there was one genre of music that I would just spend the rest of my life playing, it's that old school R&B.
Yes, sir.
Luther Vandross, Alexander O'Neill, Anita Baker,
yes, sir.
Patti LaBelle. Like, that genre of music is by far one of my favorite genres of music. And it's so simple, but it's so clean.
Yeah.
And it's such an immaculate pocket.
And some of it's intricate too. Like, they got some stuff in there. Like, I used to love Tina Turner stuff because, like, they always put like an odd time signature at the end of the song. And you just flip it around and you're like, wait a minute, this song's in seven now? Oh, shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead.
Yeah, shout out to, you know, Marcus Miller producing Luther Vandross's joints. Yeah. And a lot of those arrangements are just absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. So, and I have no particular album. It's any Anita Baker album. By the way, which I will say, I will also add, Babyface wrote a ton of songs for Anita Baker in the 90s, and she turned it down and gave it to Tony Braxton. And that's how Tony Braxton became
famous.
That
actually makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Like,
same
and
tone.
I will say that Body and Soul was like my favorite. I mean, one of my favorite Anita Baker records was Body and Soul. That record was just like, that was like 1992, I think? 92, 93?
It was like 94. Yeah. I think it was
that was like a comeback record. She had taken a hiatus for a minute.
Yep.
She put that record out. I was like, man, this record is killing.
Yeah.
But all the other older stuff too. You know what's funny? I used to think Anita Baker was way older than what she was because my grandma listened to her, and I was like, she got to be old. And Anita was like in her 30s when she came out, so she wasn't old at all because she's old now. So
right,
Trey.
So for my artist of the week, since we had the goat discussion.
Lord.
My artist here going to be.
Come on, none
other than.
You know he got the right.
Of course, it's the GOAT.
The Alan Parsons
in honor
Project.
Of the GOAT. Of course, he's going to do this. yeah, of course, you're going to do this. I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
This is honestly the only song I know by them. But this is the only one that matters.
No. You know,
your Chicago Bulls.
There you go.
And now you are starting five.
That's class.
Their biggest hit was Eye in the Sky. You know that song. If you listen to that song, you'll be like, oh shit, I forgot they did that joint.
So,
that was their biggest hit.
It's not gonna matter. You're gonna get pulled anyway because he played it.
Oh,
that's a big one.
Oops.
Nah, I'm
not. We got the rights.
I do not own the rights to this music.
All right, and my artist of the week is a producer from New Jersey named E. Jones. You should check him out. He has a record out called Deadstock Volume 4. I just released this year. I heard a song called Rooftop Summer off of it, and I was like, yo, this dude is killing. I think my last two picks have been producers. Like one, the last group I picked was from the UK, and this guy's from New Jersey. But I've been listening to a lot more instrumental, like interpretations of like music and stuff like that. So that's my artist of the week, and that's our show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for tuning in.
Wow.
On Clubhouse, we're gonna try this a little differently. I'm sure we'll try it again, and then we'll see what happens. Also, thank you for tuning in to.
Thanks to the two people who came in the Clubhouse. Sure.
Number two.
And thanks for tuning in and checking us out on wherever you can find podcasts again. And checking us out on Saturdays on Unhinged Sports Network at 12 o'clock. We're there. Yeah,
shout out Unhinged.
Shout out to Unhinged.
We're on everything, man. Spotify.
Everything.
Apple, everything.
Except for Amazon. They're giving us a runaround. Like, I filled the application out like twice, and they just won't.
Come on, Jeff Bezos. Come on.
Man. I think because they're moving here, so it's all good. So check us out wherever you can find podcasts. On Twitter, we are at IZ Sports with a Z. So at IZ. You know what? I'm not going to do that anymore because I'm going to let the voiceover do it at the end. I keep doing it, but it's on the voiceover. So, and on Instagram, it's at Sports and Things. Again, I'm your host, Dennis Turner, Jay Hill, John Lane, Trey Ely. Signing off to next week. Peace.
Hey, my nigga, Dwayne Haskins.
Lamar Jackson's overrated.
Wow. Whoa. Whoa. Okay. Why would you do that?
He's not overrated. Just figure this nigga out.
Yeah, we got the vibe on deck, bro. Four dope brothers talking sports, so let's go. If you could just imagine some dudes into music get together to talk trash about whose teams is losing. So here we go, Deke Turner, John Lane, Trey Ely, Jay Hill, the MVP, according to his theory. So now what? They got they mics and gizmos. Podcast rapper for DC, what it is, mo. Yeah, we talking sports and things. From rookies who bored to vets who about to get more rings. Plus more things, like a jam session or something. Then we beefing cause our favorite team jive like slumming, jive like pumping over podcasts and stereo every O. You want more than that ho hum, so here we go. Yeah, we go from bars to beats to podcast or astro turf with balls and cleats like that, y'all. Talking sports and things, talking sports and things. Priest the Nomad up, talking sports and things. We're talking sports and things. D Turner, John Lane, talking sports and things. Baby, we're talking sports and things. Trey Ely, Jay Hill, talking sports and things. Talking sports and things. Yeah, DC, baby. Bye, bye. Yeah, DC, baby.
Thanks for listening to Sports and Things featuring John Lane, Trey Ely, Jay Hill, and Dennis Turner. Be sure to follow and subscribe for our upcoming episodes. You can also reach the team on Instagram at sportzandthingz and on Twitter at izsportz.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.